Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, where we focus on lab-specific strategies for medical laboratory professionals. We're proud to be the healthcare detectives that work behind the scenes to get the results needed to influence medical decisions. Let's grow together and jump right into the lab.
Welcome back to another episode of the eLaborate Topics, where we delve into the minds of influential leaders shaping the world today. I'm your host for today's episode, and today I also have the pleasure of speaking with Marissa James. She is the CEO of NACLS, not only a long-term friend, but also a trailblazer in the world of the laboratory and a champion for empowering women leaders. And so I really want to get in today's episode and welcome Marissa. It's an honor having you on the show. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me, Stephanie. I'm a longtime listener of your podcast. Delighted to have met you in person a few years back. It was like a celebrity sighting. And I've also met Taiwana, one of your co-hosts. She's also fantastic. I've not had the pleasure of meeting Lona in person, but I seriously am so proud of you three for starting this podcast and empowering females, empowering those who work in the laboratory science field. It's just fantastic. And it's an absolute pleasure to be here today. And we are recording right before Laboratory Professionals Week. So please know your friends at NACLS wish you a fantastic lab week, even if it's happened in the past. Hope it was a blast.
Thank you so much. So Marissa, before we get too far into the show, why don't you share with our listeners a little bit about yourself and your journey from lab educator to now C-suite at NACLS?
Yeah, so I was appointed as the CEO of NACLS back in July of 2022. So I'm approaching now about 2 years. And one of my favorite things about my first, year and a half-ish is last year, NACLS celebrated its 50th anniversary. So I had the pleasure of commemorating such a wonderful organization that's been around for over 50 years. And prior to that, I was a program director in a medical laboratory science program in a small hospital-based program. And so through that, I also got involved in a lot of different organizations. I volunteered a lot. And so I was actually a board member for NACLS as an ASCP representative because I did a lot of volunteer work with ASCP. And on the board, I held positions as a secretary and as a vice president. On the board, I also volunteered with ASCLS. And so even though, I'm in a CEO position, shout out to Coach T. I really hope we can, get into some practical tips for some takeaways for you in your role at your laboratory.
And that's actually how we met. We were both volunteering with the same professional organization. And so it's been a whirlwind after that, but so proud of all the things you're doing over there at NACLS. It's great to see a woman and particularly yourself in that position.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, let's dive right in because this episode is about a topic that undoubtedly is gaining a lot of traction in our society today. And we're talking today about imposter syndrome. And I wanted to have Ms. Marissa James on the show because as a successful CEO and prominent female leader, undoubtedly, I know that you have faced your fair share of challenges in your career. And so my first question for you as we kind of guide ourselves into this interview is, can you just share your insights on what imposter syndrome is in your own opinion and how you may have dealt with anything you've perceived to be imposter syndrome throughout your career?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a couple stories. Let me first kind of tell you what I think imposter syndrome is. It's, in short, you worked your tail off to get your certification or your advanced degree, or maybe you got the job that you wanted or the title that you've been working so hard on, and you still have these feelings of insecurity. And by mine, it starts out as these little tiny seeds of doubt. And I don't actually think it's a lack of confidence. It's just you focus on this one negative thing out of all of your positive traits, and you think, oh my goodness, they, you know, the infamous they are going to find out about me. I am not worthy of this title. I don't belong. I'm going to be exposed. And you just kind of spiral into all of these negative thoughts. And so personally, I have two stories. And the first time this happened, I actually had no idea that this is what was happening. And so as I look back, I realize, oh, I was experiencing imposter feelings. And so as a program director, I attended my very first clinical laboratory educators conference in 2007. I had just finished my master's degree, and I needed to have NACLS knowledge. And so as part of CLEC, I attended the NACLS workshop, and then that would give me that final approval to be a program director. I was 27 years old. I was so green. There were so many people at this conference. They all looked like they knew what they were doing, and I just melted into the crowd, and I was so intimidated. I could have won fabulous prizes being one of the newest PDs, but I wouldn't dare raise my hand. I hardly spoke to anybody, and for those of you who know me, they know CLEC is like my favorite thing ever. And so I look back and I think, my gosh, I was just such an idiot. I just didn't feel like I belonged. And I was so fearful that all those educators would think, what in the world is this girl in her 20s doing here, thinking she can teach and inspire laboratory students? And it's completely embarrassing, you know, but it happened. And I had to grow through it. And my second story actually is part of my CEO experience. I did not intend to apply for the CEO position when I first heard about it. Someone actually reached out to me, asked if I was planning to apply, and I laughed. And the good news is it was sent via email, so nobody could hear me laugh, just me in my office. And I said, thank you for thinking of me. I'll think on it. And so I told my husband later that night, hey, guess what happened today? And I told him, and, you know, God love him, but he doesn't always listen when I'm talking about work. And so, but I got his attention, and he stopped in his tracks and was like, oh my gosh, Marissa, that's exactly what you've been looking for. You should absolutely apply. He knew, you know, that I was starting to get a little bit bored, but I kind of didn't really know what I should do next. And I wasn't quite convinced. So I phoned a friend, and this is that honest friend who's going to give you the cold hard truth. And wouldn't you know, she vehemently agreed with my husband. And I was like, what on earth is going on? I had no idea, literally no idea, that this position would be a good fit for me. Like, it just is all in our heads. We're our own worst critic. And this is exactly, you know, as I prepared for this application process, it was a real personal journey. And I took a deep dive into what I wanted with my career, my strengths, my weaknesses. I just needed a nudge. And I think those nudges from other individuals are one way to kind of attack imposter feelings. Because when we experience this, we think other people aren't going to, you know, take us seriously. But is it really that, or is it just me or us in our own getting in our own way? And so that's one thing that I hold on to tightly when I'm experiencing those imposter syndromes is, no, you do have people who believe in you. You just sometimes have to get out of your own head at times.
You know, Marissa, that's really interesting. I don't know a woman who hasn't experienced those feelings. And when you really get down to the foundation of imposter syndrome, it really comes from a high level of self-awareness, right? Of your own achievements, because you're very self-aware that I've reached a level of success that in my mind I really wanted to reach. And now I'm wondering, are those around me going to perceive that I'm good enough to be in this space? And many people that I've talked to, it's not about their own internal confidence. It's about do they feel that others will perceive that they have what it takes because they are a woman or because of their age or because of any other aspect of their personhood that they feel perhaps insecure about. And I really related to your story because I was talking to a colleague about this actually earlier today, and she was talking about the steps of being a laboratory professional and how you have to be an MLS, and then you have to be a lead, then you have to be a supervisor, then you have to be a manager. And I actually interrupted her and let her know that in my own personal journey, I went from being a night shift MLS to getting my first director job at the age of 22, which was a total humbling experience and, you know, very much like drinking from a water hose. But I experienced my my own level of imposter syndrome because of my age and because I didn't know what people take me seriously because of my level of experience or because of my tenure in the profession. And so just continuing to go deeper into this subject in preparation for our talk, I did a little research on percentages. And there's a 2020 poll, so it's about 3 years old, but of a significant number of high performing executive women like yourself, 750 women in this study, and 75% of those women had experienced imposter syndrome at one point of their careers. A similar study of 4,000 adults, so both men and women, found that 53% of adults had experienced imposter syndrome, while the majority of men admit only feeling it in the workplace. Women admitted to feeling it in an array of different times in their life. And so I wanted to ask you, why do you think, you know, for women particularly, particularly, like I said, high functioning female women or leaders in the healthcare environment, that we face this imposter syndrome and have this syndrome that we need to overcome?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And I don't know that I have a definitive answer, because I feel like some of these things could also apply to the male audience. But for whatever reason, it just seems like women are just too hard on ourselves. We don't set boundaries. We put too many things on our plate. We expect perfection and all of those things that we put on our plate. We don't give into each other enough grace, let alone ourselves. Our mental load is just too much. We're so worried about how others perceive us. We think everybody else has it all figured out. I think social media makes it 10 times worse today. I talk to my kids about the filtered life. You know, what you see on social media are the good days, the good hair days, the good days on vacation, the smiles. People are not going to post about their, you know, terribly cold walk outside in the cold, rainy weather in Chicago on their spring break. You're just going to see the glorious pictures of the smiling, happy family who maybe 5 minutes previously was like crabbing at each other and, you know, snipping. I don't know why we do this to ourselves. I mean, we really, as women, and this is why I love your podcast so much, is because, you know, the focus on women power and empowerment is build each other up, straighten each other's crowns, help each other out, give each other those nudges when we need them. And because there's just so much negativity, and you can really spiral real quick if you don't have, you know, a tribe that you can count on that can love on you when you need it.
I totally agree. I mean, and by no means, and I don't want our audience to think that we are therapists or this episode is by any means a replacement for any professional assistance. It's really just me and Marissa sharing our personal vantage point on this topic. But in my opinion, especially for minority women groups, I think there's just a lot that you have to overcome, whether it is realized or whether you perceive it in your journey to get where you're going, that destination to success, that when you get there, you know, a certain level of self-talk is already built in. you know, and you really have to be mindful of that. Because it's just like you said earlier, it's that negative talk that can kind of cascade and kind of let these thoughts really take over, you know, whether it is, you know, social stigmas or microaggressions that you experience on your way to what you perceive as success, that can kind of slowly chip away. Or I like what you said about straightening your crown, maybe tip your crown a little bit, to where when you get there, you wonder, you know, should I be here? Should I actually, or is there a better person? And one thing you have to always acknowledge is that self-talk. It's so important how we, particularly as women, talk to ourselves, and what we say to ourselves in the morning, and how we address ourselves, and that we treat ourselves with love. I love Mel Robbins' podcast, and Mel Robbins always says that love is an action. And, you know, if you think about how you would treat somebody that you love, that you need to treat yourself those same ways. So if you think about how you treat your spouse or your children or somebody in your family that you love, you do nice things for them, you support them, you talk graciously to them, and those same things you have to do to yourself. I know that, you know, in your career as a woman leader, you've probably done a lot of things to support, you know, the people who work, men and women, or individuals that work in your environment. And so I really want to know, from a culture and workplace standpoint, how have you, or how do you think a workplace can contribute to alleviating the feelings of imposter syndrome amongst the leaders in that workplace?
Yeah, unfortunately, I can relate to this. And so as I alluded to previously, you know, that CLEC experience that I had was crippling, and it stemmed from seeds of doubt being planted at me at my workplace. Again, I was 27 years old, high profile position, a lot of negativity aimed in my direction. And these were those, you know, it's interesting because those seeds of doubt that I had didn't necessarily come internally, because I had the confidence, but they just kept creeping in. And I knew I'd be a good PD, but I let other people, you know, and that's how it is, maybe, is you at some point in your life, somebody says something, gives you reason to doubt yourself, and then it just like never leaves. So to mitigate this in the workplace, I really just think we can help each other with inclusivity and belonging. This is one of the reasons why I do my very best to make sure all newbies feel welcome. I did this when I worked in the hospital laboratory. And today I try to acknowledge new PDs, new faculty members, make them feel worthy of being where they are, who they are. And honestly, Stephanie, I know we can do a better job with this in the laboratory and in healthcare overall. We're just not in the position to be squawking about young people are in leadership roles, or different people in leadership roles that we maybe didn't expect. Like, this is the reality that we're living in. We need to usher these new people into our profession. We've got a workforce shortage. And, you know, females can be catty. And, you know, I think some of that's rooted in our own insecurities, competitiveness. But really, it harms the person. It harms the environment you work in, even your own reputation. I still remember the names of the naysayers from 20 plus years ago. Why do we remember those things? It's so frustrating. But, you know, we do just need to work and be intentional about including people who are new or who are in a new role. You know, it starts with students, and just letting them know that they usher them into the laboratory profession with what, you know, with open arms. And it's hard. It's hard when it's stressful. You know, laboratory is a very stressful environment. And so, you know, when you're stressed out, some of those, you know, those, you see the nasty of people too. So, that definitely, you know, those feelings of doubt are going to creep in.
That is, I applaud you for that answer. That's such a wonderful take on this. And I totally agree. We are really not in the position to, you know, have this level of pickiness, because
right.
we are in a workforce shortage. We just recently did a recording with Dr. Rodney Rohde, who is another rock star and pivotal name in laboratory medicine. And he was talking about how he teaches his students that your career starts the minute you walk into the laboratory. You know, gone are the days where you've got a little bit of time to kind of stand on the periphery and watch what's going on. You could walk in the door and in 6 months be in a elevated role or in some type of either formal or non-formal leadership position, because we are in that spot. And it takes all of us to kind of dig ourselves out of this hole. And you're right. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't really have the flexibility to say, well, you've got to have 10 years or you've got to have 2 years of hematology experience. We just aren't in that position anymore. We're in the position where we have to say, are you willing to step up? Well, okay, well, let me help you. Let me lift you up.
Absolutely.
Let me see what I can do to make sure you stay there, because we need every working body that we can have. I want to ask you, what are your own personal tips and tricks or strategies or practices that you found that have helped you either build or maintain your confidence as you've gone through your career journey?
Yeah, I actually have a couple different ones that I hope are helpful to the audience today. The first one is really just never give other people the power to bring you down. I'm generally a very positive person. Sometimes that can be a little annoying to people. I just have gotten to the point where I don't care if people think I'm too positive or that I laugh too loud. I know I laugh too loud. I know it's startling, but I'm not going to stop doing it because, you know, you kind of reach in your 30s and 40s, you know, mid-30s to early 40s, I realized I just don't need that negativity in my life. And so I avoid some of the, you know, the negatory, you know, the negative stuff. But so that's one strategy. Another one, actually, Lona, one of your co-hosts, referenced a book called Positive Intelligence. And I looked it up. It's episode 46, and she discusses mental fitness. And what the author talks about is to name your inner critic and acknowledge in that moment that you're feeling like an imposter. And he talks about your inner saboteurs, one of which is the judge. He recommends naming your judge because it's empowering, because you can tell that voice, you don't belong here. You are not productive. I am in charge. I don't need the imposter. They're the imposter, not me. I belong. And so it helps. I still have to remind myself why I'm here, what my strengths are. But a lot of times I'm just like, I kick the imposter to the curb, and it's kind of a mind game. But you really need to do, you really need to like call out time to process these feelings. Another thing that I've experienced with another person actually was just really just talking about those experiences in the moment. So in one particular instance, a colleague and I were walking into a big meeting room. There were about 60 people at this round table, and some of the last couple seats were actually looked like they were at the head of the table. They weren't, but it looked like they were. And so we kind of looked at each other and were like, I mean, do we sit here? And he was like, well, my imposter feeling's kicking in hardcore right now, but I think we can do this together. And it was really, really cool that he just straight up addressed the elephant in the room. He acknowledged the imposter syndrome feelings right off the bat. It helped me settle down. I knew I wasn't alone, and I could shut off that inner critic. And we were proud of each other. There was no reason to feel like we didn't belong. We were in it together, and that's, you know, that's why that belonging and inclusive is so important.
I totally agree. I have a similar story about Dr. Rohde again, so I'm definitely going to tag him in this episode because I've mentioned his name now twice. but he emailed me recently about some advice, and I got the email and it said, hey friend, or hey Texas friend. That's always how we address each other, because we literally live up like 30 minutes up the road from each other. And he said, I wanted to ask your advice. And he went on to ask this question. And I replied and I said, my imposter syndrome is kicking in because here is this, you know, paramount in lab medicine, Dr. Rodney Rohde, who is this pivotal person and this, you know, particular expert in X, Y, and Z. And he's written all of these books. And during COVID, he was the voice for Texas. And you are asking me advice? He replied and he goes, no, you're a phenomenal leader. I really respect, you know, your thoughts and on this opinion. And I really want to know, you know, how you would go in this situation. And me just speaking it in that moment and, you know, letting it be known. And like you said, putting the elephant in the room kind of decrease the anxiety and kind of let go of the vibe a little bit. So you're right. Just calling it out. It is what it is in that moment. I am not an imposter, but I have that feeling right now. It's not who I am. It's a feeling that I'm having. Yep. And I can call it out and let it pass. And the people around me can support me in that. And I love that as a strategy.
Yeah, that's such a fantastic story because, you know, that's exactly how we, I love that Dr. Rohde came back and told you all of those wonderful things about you, because sometimes, again, it's a nudge. We need to be reminded. I have one other strategy that I use that I think might be helpful to your listeners. And I read a book called Practice of Presence by Ann Cuddy. I read this when I first became CEO. The CEO selection committee suggested I work on my executive presence, which was fantastic advice. And this gal also has a viral TED Talk. It's a really good listen. And she discusses body language and power poses. And the one I want to share with you is one that I use, particularly when I'm going to talk in front of big groups. You are supposed to stand up with your hands on your hips, chin up, chest puffed out like Superwoman. And I personally like to do it in the bathroom in front of a mirror because I'm already checking to make sure I don't have herbs in my teeth, you know, and that kind of thing. But this is a strategy I employ when I'm feeling maybe like an imposter or even just like powerless. But she's got a lot of research that indicates that this action inherently makes you feel powerful and more confident. Yeah, it's a mind game, but guess what? So is imposter syndrome. And so I have found that this has been incredibly helpful. And sometimes, like, if there's people actually in the room, like in the bathroom, and I don't really want to, you know, do my superwoman pose in front of everybody, I'll just maybe do it, you know, in the stall or something like that. You know, it's kind of silly, but it tricks my mind, and it really works. So use this, like, if you are needing to go talk to your boss, you're getting ready for your performance review, or you want to, you know, you've got to pitch a project, or you want to be considered for a promotion. Like, honestly, power poses make me feel like a boss. So give it a shot.
I love the Superwoman pose, and I'm in my head, like, picturing you with your hands and your hips and your feet kind of right outside of your your waist, and like, you know, standing in that power pose, maybe even facing the sun, you know.
Yep. Exactly. I love your cardigan
blowing in the wind.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we've kind of mentioned it, but, you know, when it comes to imposter syndrome, maybe particularly for women, but also for other professionals, it seems that a support network and a support system and having others that you can call on or lean on is really critical. So I want to ask you about that, about the role that mentorship plays when it comes to overcoming imposter syndrome, and if you've had mentors that have helped you along your way, or have you mentored others?
Yeah, absolutely. Building your network, your social capital is a huge benefit. You definitely want to have, you know, a tribe of supporters. And I have several colleagues from the past who helped me get where I am today. And then even just in the last couple of years. And the one thing to remember about mentors is you don't really need to limit yourself to laboratory professionals. And mentors also, like, sometimes you don't even need to think of them as higher than you. You know, sometimes a mentor is a colleague that is in a leadership position in a different segment of the work. For instance, I have a colleague that works in the nursing field, and so we've bounced ideas off of each other. One of my good friends is a VP at T-Mobile, and so it's great to kind of talk to her about different things. She actually, when I got my job, she actually sent me a crown. Isn't that adorable? She found one on Amazon. Like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, just someone who can build you up when you're starting to feel, you know, like you just, those doubts are creeping in. I have another friend who we just are going to get started on monthly meetings. And she was my best friend from college. And I'm sure we're going to talk about non-work related stuff, but we're also going to talk about some of those difficult conversations. And maybe they are in the laboratory. Maybe you do specifically want someone in the laboratory as well, but don't forget that mentorship can take different forms. It could be someone in a different field, and it could be someone on the same playing field as you. And you just never know when you're networking. I know sometimes networking can be extremely overwhelming for introverted individuals, but it's completely worth it. How I got involved with ASCP is when I went to a NACLS workshop. There was an ASCP volunteer who was going off of the scholarship selection committee, and she wanted to bring me into the fold because she was also a hospital-based program director, and she felt like that group needed a hospital-based program director. And for whatever reason, she thought I was going to be a great fit, and so she nominated me to be a part of that group. And that led me to be nominated to be an ASCP representative on the NACLS Board of Directors. And it all just kind of, you know, trickled down. And so it's amazing, you know, the networking that you want to intentionally build. But then there's also, leave yourself a little bit of room for those unintentional, accidental type of opportunities just by showing up at your local ASCLS meeting or ASCP or CLMA or whatever the case may be.
You know what? And I think one more thing for the listeners to know, and I take this as something that Jenny Beck recently said in an interview I did with her. Your mentors don't even have to necessarily know they're mentoring you. There are so many people that I have just watched and admired from afar and really said, you know what? If they can do it, I can do it too. And for introverted people, don't underestimate the power of social media. Now, it can be a negative if you are spending your time mindlessly scrolling and looking at things that aren't productive and getting you to where you want to go. But, you know, if you are into being a food blogger, there's so many people you could follow and look at what they're doing and mimic how they're doing it. Or if you want to be eventually one day a TEDx talker, there are so many. There's TEDx, there's TEDx San Antonio, there's TEDx by your city that you live in. There's so many people that you can watch and admire and, you know, kind of take tidbits from what they're doing. It's so easy to just send somebody a note in their private DMs and just say, hey, I like what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, are there any tips that you can offer me, et cetera? And even if you're an introverted person, you know, you can hide behind social media a little bit and help that give you a little bit of courage if you need to. Marissa, you've named a couple of books during this recording, and I've written them all down, and I'm going to link them in the show notes for our listeners in case they're driving. We want you to be safe. So when you, when you're able to, you can just click on the show notes and link to these books. But are there any other specific resources for people who feel like they may be challenged with imposter syndrome, or if you're a laboratory person, like we just mentioned, that is introverted, that would help develop leadership skills further?
Yeah, definitely. Presence by Ann Cuddy. She even talks about how to sit at a meeting, and it's very basic stuff rooted in research that helps you, your body language. So that I definitely recommend that. I read that all the way through. The other one I mentioned was The Positive Intelligences, and that one was good. Another book I read when I first became named the CEO is I read The First 90 Days. And The First 90 Days is by Michael Watkins. And I definitely recommend someone who's taking on a leadership role. It can also apply to just, you know, a person not taking a leadership role, but I think it's going to be more powerful if it's your first leadership role. And it divides the first 90 days into three blocks of 30 days each. And the first block is going on a listening tour, learning and building credibility with your employees, really just getting a lay of the land and figuring out who your informal leaders are. The second block is focusing on early wins, key priorities, by discovering projects that you found out on your listening tour that are most important to everyone. And then the third kind of dives deep into your initiatives and it really helped me organize my plan and prioritize my work. Another one that I read is The Great Employee Handbook by Quint Studer. And that's one that that would be good for anyone in any role because it talks about how to talk to your boss. It discusses the we they-ism. It talks a lot about employee culture. And so I've really enjoyed that one. And, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you may be more of an audiobook kind of person. For me, I can't listen to audiobooks if they're the smut novels. I have to have it in my hand, whether it's on my, you know, Kindle app or an actual book. But my management leadership books, they've got to be audio because I listen to them when I'm on a walk or in the car. And so I just wanted to, you know, let people know that that's an option. If you like podcasting, you might actually really enjoy listening to, you know, Presence by Ann Cuddy as an audiobook. And a lot of times, I don't know, I like it when it's the author reading it. For some reason, it just feels like they're talking straight to me. And I also, here's another little trick, I also increase the speed to like 1.2, 1.25. You can tell that I talk fast, so I kind of process fast, and so I like doing that, especially if you're short on time. You can, you know, knock out a 45-minute podcast in about 30 minutes. So there's a couple of ideas for you.
And that was also a CEO tip for this podcast. Process fast, talk fast, listen fast.
Right.
Marissa, we've got a new tradition on this show where we ask a previous guest to ask us a question for a future guest. And so I mentioned him now three times. I asked Dr. Rhodey a question. And for a future guest, he did not know who I was going to ask this to. So the question was just in general for a future guest. And so I'm going to ask that question of you now. And the question is, if you could look backwards in your career and talk to yourself at any given time, whether that be college or the start of your career, what one to two things or advice would you have for yourself?
Trust yourself. And this goes for everything. Trust your training, trust the process, don't overthink it, and never, ever, ever let someone tell you to stop laughing loud.
I love that. I would say the same to myself. Trust yourself. Know that it's all going to be okay.
It is going to be okay.
Remember.
It doesn't mean it's not going to be hard, but it is going to be okay.
Right. And that doesn't mean it's not going to, it may not be the way you want it to be. And it may not look the way you want it to look, but it will be okay.
Yeah. It's all not always a straight line. Sometimes we're zigging and zagging.
But that's the fun.
Yes.
That's the fun. So yes, before I let you go, Marissa, I have one last question. And this question has a little bit of a catch to it, because I want you to name a guest that you would like to hear on our podcast. But the catch is, before you name the person, you have to help me get the name of your answer on the show.
Yes. So another book that I failed to mention that I think would be good is The Working Genius, and it is by authored by Patrick Lencioni. And this is a fantastic book because it's like a personality assessment for the work environment. And it's, you know, you can apply it to your personal life, but it really digs into your strengths and your frustrations in the workplace. And I had the pleasure of working with a table group consultant, and she was also my executive coach. And I think she would be a fantastic person to bring onto your podcast because she can kind of give you an overview of what that work assessment looks like. And we took our team, we took our NACLS team through this, the Working Genius assessment, and kind of talked about everyone's strengths, competencies, and work frustrations. And it has been incredible for our team, just understanding why someone, like, just why we do some of the things that we do. Why does it drive me absolutely crazy if they're building something in the neighborhood and I don't know what it is? Well, it's because I have the wonder genius. I just sit and wonder with my head in the cloud a lot of times. And then other people are inventors and they thrive on a blank piece of paper where they can do whatever they want with. And other people, that gives them so much anxiety, they want a template to work with. And so I think she would be a fantastic person to bring to the podcast. I really think laboratorians would enjoy hearing what she has to say.
Well, it sounds like we've got a treat coming up for you in the future.
Woohoo!
On the Working Genius Assessment. And I love that you're going to help us make that connection.
I am.
Marissa, before we part today, I know you're a very busy person, but if there is a listener who wants to connect with you and wants to learn more about this topic or just hear more that's going on at NACLS or just connect with you as a professional, how can they reach out to you?
Yeah, so I am on LinkedIn. And so it's Marissa James. That's with one R, one S. And also, that's my email, marissajames@nacls.org. So marissajames@nacls.org. And if you put this podcast on fast, that might have been too fast. So
I will also link that in the show notes.
Well, good. Thank you.
For all the people who don't listen fast and talk fast.
Right, right.
Marissa, I really want to thank you for your time today. I have so enjoyed talking to you. I've wanted to get you on the show since the show started, and I'm so excited to have recorded this really important, pivotal topic with you. So thank you so much.
Thank you. You are such a great host, asking all the questions and adding in your own little anecdotes. I just love it. You did great.
I think the listeners are in for a treat. Thank you for everyone who tuned in today. Thank you for listening to this podcast weekly. This is a labor of love for myself, Taiwana, and Lona. We love giving you practical tips that you can take and excel on and off the bench. We so love giving this to you that we want to continue to do so. So be sure not to just listen to this episode, but to share it with your friends so we can maintain our international audience that we have for the last 4 years. We love being able to provide you this weekly show through different platforms. So through Labvine, through Direct Impact, and through all podcast platforms. And we want to be able to continue to do that. So share this with your friends. Don't be stingy. Share it out with everyone. And until next week, we hope that you have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics, where your hosts discussed relevant strategies for laboratory professionals. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and listen to us on directimpactbroadcasting.com. Stay tuned for another episode with information you can use to excel in your laboratory career.